Extension Phase 2A Pole Building.
Good morning. Just one item on my agenda this morning. It's in regard to a proposed bid award for Sussex County Project Number 12-09. This is the fourth and final contract for the $2 million in grant money that we received from RD. If you recall, we need to expend these funds by June 30th or we will lose them. This proposed project will build two buildings at the Inland Bays Regional Wastewater Facility. One is an equipment storage building, and the second is a building, a solids handling building. Even though we don't have the solids handling in place at this time, we can use the funds early to construct the building, which the solids could be stored and then ultimately spread on the fields. The low bidder was Doubletree Structures of New Holland, PA. Bid amount of $219,963. The engineer's estimate was $285,000. There's no questions. I have a motion I can read.
Why was there so many no bids?
Part of it is because we're using this RD funding, there's a lot of bells and whistles attached to the contracts that a lot of the smaller contractors who purchase the plans and specs aren't used to dealing with. Also, some of them struggled to get their bonds, whether it was a bid bond or ultimately the performance and payment bonds. And then finally, that we have them on a very tight time frame. We need to start construction by about May 1st and have it done by June 30th or we lose the money. So there were steep penalties associated with it. So the contractor who did was the low bidder is used to working on for these government type contracts, and some of the other, you know, standard pole building companies just weren't used to dealing with this type of format.
What are some of these bells and whistles?
There were some concerns about the reports that had to be made. Some of the, you know, when we called yesterday to find out why one contractor thought there were wage rates involved, and it was clearly discussed that there were no wage rates, but he thought that he would have to pay his workers wage rates and turn in certified payrolls. The reports and the shop drawings that have to be turned into our inspectors. This was the survey that we did yesterday because we fully expected a full suite of contractors bidding on this job.
Okay. How big is this building?
One is 70 by 65 and the other is 90 by 65.
Oh, it's two buildings. 70 two buildings. By 65.
And 90 by 65.
Is there
and there's also, fence that has to be relocated. Also, you know, a large crusher on apron has to be constructed to give, you know, vehicle access to the two buildings.
How much of the money is federal money? All of it?
Excuse me?
How much of the money is federal money?
All of it. It's 100% grant eligible.
Any more questions, Mr. Rizzo? You have a motion, sir?
It's going to be all planked inside, is it, or what? So they can put, are it just going to be tin, or is it going to be?
Yeah, it's just going to be tin. Ultimately, our people, the one is just going to store our sludge material, so we don't have to do any improvements. There's no need. We're not even going to put lights in there. But the other building, I could expect some of our maintenance workers at the Inland Bays plant may ultimately want to put some planking inside, you know, just to make it.
That tin sure not going to hold much.
Yeah.
Not for siding. I mean, if it should have some kind of planking in there, I think.
Be it moved based upon the recommendation of the engineering department that Sussex County Project Number 12-09, Inland Bays Regional Wastewater Facility Expansion Phase 2A, be awarded to Doubletree Structures of New Holland, PA at the bid amount of $219,963, contingent upon the receipt of approval from the funding agency.
Entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion.
Second.
Motion, Mrs. Deaver. Second, Mr. Phillips. Any question on the motion? We'll take the vote, Mrs. Deaver.
Yes.
Mr. Phillips.
Yes.
Mr. Wilson.
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried. Thank you, sir.
I have a question with Mr. Izzo. You have all these projects that you oversee, and yet you're able to deal with my constituents directly. I just want to thank you. I don't know how you do it all.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I get a lot of thank you letters from them.
Next, Mr. Vince Robertson, discussion and possible introduction of draft ordinance relating to subdivision and zoning codes.
Thank you, Mr. Benson. Again, before you, I think you have a memo that was in your packet with six or seven ordinances, and what I propose to do is go through each one of them just briefly for introduction. As council knows, if they're introduced, because they're zoning ordinances or subdivision code ordinances, they'd have to go to the Planning and Zoning Commission for a public hearing and then back to council for a public hearing. So all we're looking for today is just that they be introduced, if that's council's desire, so that we can kind of get them in that pipeline. So what I think I'll do is go through them in the same order that they're in the packet, and after I just give a brief explanation of each one, I'll read the title so that somebody can introduce it if that's, again, the desire of council.
Certainly.
So the first one is, it regards the typical road sections for subdivisions, and the subdivision codes at the back end of it, there's actually a cross section that's still in there of how Sussex County roads are to be built. And for whatever reason, general code and our code never deleted that. The written language within the code eliminates that completely, but it still shows up in the code. And since then, those road sections and requirements have completely changed. So this gets that picture, basically, out of the code. And again, it's just a clarification or correction.
So we're not changing the standards that we...
No, what we're actually doing is eliminating some confusion, because if somebody who didn't know the process, they would look in the subdivision code, and they might think, okay, well, this is how I have to build a road in mm-hmm. Sussex County, based on this picture, when that picture is no longer what's required.
Is there any thought of replacing the picture with what is accurate?
We talked about that with planning and zoning and also engineering. The problem is that evolves. We'd have to come back in to you all and constantly update the code. I mean, it changes enough with the technology and the asphalt requirements and things like that it would really make that cumbersome. So what the code actually now says within the within Chapter 99 is that it's based on the guidelines established by the county engineering department. So, and that's the way it's been working for several years now. Again, this just, right now we have the county engineering guidelines that's established by the code, and then this picture that's outdated, that's probably 15 or 20 years old, that just doesn't belong in there anymore. So,
and can that standard be subjective by the county engineer at the time of application? In other words, the way you just said it, it almost sounds like the county engineer can subjectively say, I don't like that, I'd rather you...
No, it's this. And this is literally like the pavement dimensions, you know, how much asphalt you need, the base, you know, and that type of thing. And no, that's not the way that it's applied. They establish those standards and apply them uniformly, you know, as the standards may change. And so, in other words, I think your question is, you know, can I come up with a subjective set of standards for this particular development? And the answer to that is that no. It would change, and if it changed, it would apply on, you know, anybody coming in for a new development, but it would apply to all those new developments. So.
Okay. Have there been any problems because of that?
Not that I'm aware of. I think it's been working fine. I do think we get questions every once in a while, though, if somebody who's not familiar with the process... And then they go to Chapter 99, and again, they see this picture, they're going to be confused because that's no longer what applies.
If I may add, the picture is a basic, the minimum. And for example, we have it shows basically a 20-foot wide paved surface within a 50-foot right-of-way with swales on both sides. It shows you there's a 6-inch base material and a good subgrade. We've had projects that have come in because of their location, and it may be that the right-of-way is elevated on more on one side and had to be bulkheaded because it's adjacent to wetlands, and then it all sloped down to the swale on one side. So it doesn't match a lot of projects. It's just a typical mm-hmm. example. Mm-hmm. And we have, over the years, had some confusion based on that example versus what the actual specifications are. Mm-hmm. And engineering does all the inspections, and they... In the last year, they've amended their cross-section requirements. It's an improvement for us, and it deletes that confusion issue with the people seeing the picture.
Okay.
So this one is an ordinance to delete Attachment 1, Chapter 99 of the Code of Sussex County regarding, quote, typical road sections for subdivisions, close quote.
I introduce it.
Introduce that.
Mr. Phillips, introduce it. Next, sir.
The next one is in regard to the subdivision code. It adds a definition of property owner. This has come up, I know, in the time that I've been working with planning and zoning, where somebody wants to amend a subdivision site plan, and you need to get votes or consents from property owners, lot owners within the subdivision. And it's never been spelled out whether each lot gets one vote. You know, if you have husband and wife on a property, do they get two votes, or do they get one vote for their lot? Whether, you know, one person owns five lots, do they get five votes? Or if they're just one person, they get one vote? And it's just one of those things that comes up seemingly every time we have to deal with one of these. So this actually adds a definition of property owner. And it basically says any owner of a parcel of real estate identified on the assessment rolls of Sussex County's assessment office. And then in the case of more than one lot or parcel owned by the same person or legal entity, each lot gets one vote. And it also clarifies that, you know, you can't put 40 people on one lot and get 40 votes. Each lot just gets one vote. And it's just one of those things that kind of over the years we've always interpreted, but now that we've got some time, it just sets in stone.
So what you're saying is if one person owns five lots, he's got five votes.
That's right. That's right. So this, the title for this one is an ordinance to amend Chapter 99, Section 99-5 and Section 99-13A of the Code of Sussex County to add a definition of property owner.
I'll introduce it.
Mr. Phillips introduced it.
The next one is just really completely a housekeeping issue. The code for planning and zoning talked about when preliminary plats would be considered. And it actually said that a public hearing in accordance with Delaware Code shall be conducted at the second regular meeting of the commission. And as everybody knows, we meet, the commission meets twice a month and more if need be. So it just wasn't matching up with what the code said. So this just says the next available regular meeting of the commission as determined by the department and the commission, just so we don't get hung up on that. So this one, unless there's any question, the title is an ordinance to amend Chapter 99, Section 99-9 of the Code of Sussex County to clarify the timing of a public hearing.
And it'll still be posted for public, and no change in that.
Oh, no, there's no change in that at all. Just theoretically, I guess, you know, you could say, well, you're only supposed to have public hearings once a month. And, of course, that would slow everything down.
Right.
So, and we haven't been doing that, but it just makes practice consistent with the code. The next one is just a typographical error. There was a phrase in Chapter 99, actually Chapter 99, Section 16D1, that just didn't make any sense where it was located. It was duplicated somewhere else, and then for some reason this one was just sort of dangling there in that particular section, so it just deletes it out of it completely. What's deleted is the requirement on a site plan that there be a space for the signature of an authorized representative of the Sussex Conservation District approving the location and design of all stormwater management areas and erosion and sediment control facilities, which shall be shown on the final site plan. Again, it just, that phrase shows up two places in the code. One of them just doesn't make any sense. So we're just deleting.
But it's still going to be required.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. Just a little bit of background on that. That was added in several years ago because we had a situation where we had all different site plans that were going around. Sussex Conservation District would approve one site plan, but it wouldn't necessarily be the same site plan that ended up as the final site plan for the county. Mm-hmm. So the reason that we have that signature requirement is not to give really any more discretion to the Conservation District. It's more to make sure that they're all the same plan. So in other words, they have to look at the final site plan and say, yes, that's the same one that we approved. Because it was creating all kinds of confusion that there were these multiple different plans around and nobody knew which one was actually the final one. So
what if that department were to create regulations that exceeded what this council felt was appropriate and began to not sign it?
Might say override it.
Well, at this point, for final site plans, and I know there's been some discussion, I know Mr. Lawson talked about that, which I haven't been privy to. Currently, final site plans do need the approval of the Conservation District. That's one of the things that Mr. Lank looks for before it comes back on an agenda for approval as a final site plan. So to my understanding, that requirement's not changing by this. all this code section did when it was added several years ago was make sure that the plans that the Conservation District approved and told Mr. Lank they had approved are the same plans that is the final site plan that Planning and Zoning is seeing. Mm-hmm. It just sort of closes that gap.
Typically, when the commission doesn't, or staff doesn't grant final approval of a site plan until we received all agency approvals.
Which includes the conservation.
Which includes the conservation district. Mm-hmm. And it was not only the conservation district reviewing different plans, we found that and site plans, not subdivision, but site plans, we even had issues where the fire marshal was looking at a plan just a little different. Mm-hmm. They weren't major, but they were different.
Yeah.
Fire marshal, conservation district, and zoning were all looking at something different.
Yeah.
Minor, but they were different. So we want to make sure everybody was on the same page.
So the signature.
I guess it's two separate issues. I think this change is appropriate, but again, it gets back to authority. Has there been any discussions about a way that this council can allow a development to move forward if we deem some of these requirements by the agencies as excessive? Do we have that authority?
I don't know
now?
If we have that authority because they're enforcing their regulations, they're granting final approval, and what work has to be taking place on site is based on their approvals.
On
each agency. Each agency is a little different.
Who gave them this authority to have this final zoning approved?
It's not a final zoning approval, it's approval of their requirements, not ours.
Yeah, but it's written here. They got the final word, they got the last word.
No, we do. We have to accept their approval before we can sign it.
Not the way I understand it.
Well, the question is, did we give them the authority to...
To do that.
To do that, or is that state law?
I don't know that it's state law.
I can go back and research that. I know that's kind of the discussion that we talked about early in the agenda, and if between Mr. Moore's office and mine, we can look at, if it's county code, that's something obviously that we can look at. I want to say that also comes from state law, too, and so that would be a change up in Dover, we'd have to look at.
But we can still come up with ordinances if we want to, as far as draining and that type of thing, drainage and that, if we wanted to, that would affect these.
We
could have the authority if we wanted to. Is that correct?
We could, but that's sort of the tip of the iceberg, I think, because if, we start doing drainage issues, then we also have to look at implementing those ordinances. I mean, right now, that's what the Conservation District does. We'd have to then get into doing the same type of inspections and things that the conservation does.
Well, they don't enforce it, do they?
Well,
Chapter 99 says they do.
Well, I don't know that they enforce it. Again, we just need that approval from conservation district, like the fire marshal, like county engineering, et cetera, before it can come back to us for a final site plan.
Again, it's a probably for another day, right. But mm-hmm. One of the biggest complaints I get from developers who are hiring hundreds of people to get these things done is, yes, Sussex County Council is very reasonable in their processes, but once we get into these agencies, we can just get run around and around and
just
around.
Right.
And I'm just trying to understand what authority we have to bypass those agencies should we come to determine that they're being excessive in their requirements. We would have to change our ordinance, correct?
Yeah, there would have to be some sort of, relief valve, if you will, in that case where, the Planning and Zoning Commission
at least
have
force them
to
move. We're not, at this point, we have no force at all.
Okay. When you read it, I'll be willing to introduce it.
This one, the title is an ordinance to amend Chapter 99, Section 99-16, parentheses 1, close parentheses, of the Code of Sussex County to delete a typographical error.
Mm-hmm. I'll introduce it.
Mr. Phillips, introduce it.
The next one deals with conditional uses. I want to make clear right now in the code regarding conditional uses, there's currently a 3-year period for it to be substantially underway. Mm-hmm. There's also a requirement that it expires upon abandonment or expiration of that use. We're not changing that 3-year time period, and we're actually clarifying what abandonment means. The problem is, and I think we've talked about this before, there's no definition of what substantially underway means, so that if I'm a property owner developer, I don't know what I need to do to get my conditional use, sort of past that trigger point. Likewise, you know, there was no definition of what our time period for what abandonment meant, you know, and so we'd get into the situation, okay, well, nothing's happened for 6 months. Is that abandonment? We just, you know, you wouldn't know. So this, what it does is it gives a definition of substantially underway, and it also states that if you, you know, basically don't use your property and it remains idle or unused or no construction activity is underway for 2 years, that would be deemed abandonment. So it creates that clarification, which I think is good for the county, knowing how to enforce what's already in the code, and it's also good, I hope, for property owners, so that way they know what the rules are. I mean, we have the rules, but there's not been the supporting language to say what these rules really mean, so that's what we've done with this.
No construction at all.
Right, all right. Again, it says, abandonment shall mean that the subject parcel remains idle or unused, or that no construction activity is actively underway for a continuous period of 2 years, whether or not fixture or equipment are removed.
But there could have been lots sold and built prior to that, could there not?
Yeah, but I do think that, you know, in the case that lots are sold or built or like a multifamily building's up, that's not going to be abandonment because there literally is, you know, a sale that's occurred, mm-hmm. so there's use and that's ongoing.
Mm-hmm.
But when we have almost a catastrophic event like we had in 2008 in our economy that is still affecting us today, that may be more than 2 years. I mean, is this really wise to consider it abandoned if economic conditions beyond the developer's control has caused them to take a pause for more than 2 years?
I'm going to dodge that question and say that's an answer for the council. That's what we propose, and I would say we'd go through that with the public
hearings. That's what P&Z has proposed.
We went through the discussion on that. Actually, it's been a couple months now, and that was the time period that the department looked at and then went through with P&Z and came back with 2 years. You know, and it may or may not be the right period of time. And I should explain also the 3 years. That obviously still would be subject to the extensions that were granted.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it was last January or whenever they were. But so the code says 3 years, as it always had, but then that was modified by that extension that was granted in the past.
Well, I like to see new builders come in and finish a project if somebody cannot complete it. I don't know if this affects that or not. I would think you wouldn't want it to drag on and just nothing happening there.
Well, I mean, we can go through this at the public hearing stage, but you know, one scenario would be that you have, and we see this now, you have 3 years to be substantially underway. A developer wouldn't necessarily know what substantially underway
mm-hmm.
meant, but
mm-hmm.
they would typically go in and clear an entrance and do some rough grading and put some rough stormwater management in. So that eliminates that. They're substantially underway within 3 years, so they preserve their conditional use.
Mm-hmm.
Then, assuming they got that done, if they didn't do one thing more for 2 years and a month, the county could declare it abandoned, and then it would expire. What we're looking for is whether it's 2 years or what the time period is, but they kind of get substantial underway and continue working.
I'll introduce that.
So let me read that title. This is an ordinance to amend Chapter 115, Section 115-174 of the Code of Sussex County to define when construction or use is substantially underway or abandoned for the purpose of determining the period of validity for a conditional use.
Anyone want to introduce that?
I introduced it.
Mrs. Deaver introduced it.
And I'll go back and check, too, in response to Mr. Phillips' question, that 2 years may also have tied into some existing language in the subdivision code, but I'll clarify that for the public hearing. The next one is, again, just a typographical thing. It's Section 115-194.1. It's basically a table of minimum buffer and setback requirements. What it does is takes all those requirements that are throughout the code and all the various different zoning districts and put them in one place. And when that was done, and then when the CR1 zoning district was established, the reference to the CR zoning district was never included in this table. So that's all it does. It just
mm-hmm.
takes that existing requirement and puts it in the table. So unless there's a question, I'll read the title. An ordinance to amend Chapter 115, Article 25, Section 115-194.1 to include reference to setbacks and buffers in the CR1 commercial residential district.
I'll introduce it.
Even introduces that.
think the last one, yes, is regarding RPC preliminary site plans and final site plans. RPCs are sort of a hybrid. They're in the zoning code, and they're also in the subdivision code. We never had a clear connection between the two as to their periods of validity. The way the planning and zoning offices treated site plans for RPC is that because they're essentially a subdivision, we're going to treat them the same way as subdivisions for those time periods. So it just makes it clear for everybody that's how that it's treated. And that's historically how it's been done. So it just adds a cross-reference to the subdivision code in the RPC section of the zoning code.
So if it is a subdivision, we still have to hear RPCs, though.
Absolutely. Yeah. Their zoning changes, an RPC is an overlay zoning change. So it comes to county council.
Still hear it.
Once it gets approved by county council, then it's sort of treated like a subdivision, and the site plans go through planning and zoning. So it's a little bit of both. So this just brings it all together. So this one, the title is An Ordinance to Amend Chapter 115, Section 218 of the Code of Sussex County to clarify the validity of an RPC preliminary and final site plan.
Anyone want to introduce that?
I'll introduce it.
Mr. Deemer, introduce it. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, and I look forward to coming back after it goes to planning and zoning and answering everybody's questions. Thanks.
Grant, record.